This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the COVID crisis has been severely compromised and escalated, really, by the emergence of the Omicron variant. It came, we believe, from South Africa. Certainly, it was discovered by South Africa, and the scientists there very kindly, promptly let the world know that this variant existed. And now it has spread over the last 7 days or so across Europe, and people believe that it may well have been there even before South Africa alerted the world for their troubles. They've been punished, many believe, by having flights from South Africa banned from most European countries and indeed from other states in Southern Africa. But throughout the COVID pandemic, one of the most interesting stories has been Sweden's approach to dealing with COVID. We've formed no consensus in Europe throughout this in any country at all. And Sweden is no different. But what is different about Sweden is the power that the state epidemiologist Anders Tegnell has. He makes the calls and he stands by them. And his calls have been unique and not particularly popular in his own country, and indeed observers elsewhere in Europe are also highly critical. In fact, there is an inquiry being conducted now in Sweden, and a man called Mattias Karlsson, who's the former leader of the populist Sweden Democrats, told the Financial Times last week that Tegnell had been completely wrong, quote, on several issues, and that the judgment on him by this commission of inquiry would be very harsh. We're joined now from Stockholm by Philip O'Connor, an excellent Irish journalist who lives and works in Sweden and has done for many years. Philip, things have moved on since Mattias Karlsson, politician, made that very harsh judgment on Tegnell. But we've talked to you a lot about Tegnell over the past 21 months and his approach. How's he doing?
I think it's just about to get an awful lot worse, Eamon. And, you know, the reason I say that is because this is the first time in my 23 odd years in Sweden that I've ever agreed with Mattias Karlsson about absolutely anything. Yes. So, you know, I'd have nothing in common with him politically, but, you know, you just get the feeling that things are starting to turn slightly. So, you know, if we were to have had this conversation 2 weeks ago, Sweden was, on the face of things, actually doing okay. So at the start of November, the very few restrictions that did exist were being removed. They were cutting down on testing. They didn't see that as being necessary. And now they're backing up the truck very, very quickly indeed. I don't usually like to share sort of personal experience of these things, Eamon, where I tried to sort of stick to the statistics and the facts. But as it would happen, on the 5th of November, I think they said, okay, if you're double vaccinated and you get symptoms, don't test yourself. There's no more. We're not going to drive a test out to your house and collect it and analyze it. Just stay where you are and wait for it to pass, right? As it happened, a few days after that date, I started to feel the symptoms myself. I went into the app here, I tried to order the test, it says, no, don't do anything, just sit there and wait for it to pass. Now, I didn't think it was COVID, but, you know, I said, okay, I'll do what the state is asking me to do. And a few days later, I thought, this is not right. I need to find out for myself whether I've had it or not. Now, I stayed in my bedroom basically the whole time, you know, food almost being pushed under the door like it was a Victorian prison to me. But yeah. I took an antibody test after that, and it turned out that I had actually had COVID in this time. So the problem there, Eamon, is that, you know, we talk...
And you were double jabbed.
Yeah, double jabbed a whole lot. Fit as a fiddle, I like to think, at the age of 50 years old, you know, and that was it. And it just knocked me out completely. And to be honest, Eamon, I'm still not back to where I was. My energy levels go up and down. So, you know, even sort of tidying the house, I haven't been able to train. I like to train 3-4 times a week. Yesterday morning, I had to watch as the local young lads were playing five-a-side football indoors on a Sunday morning. Normally, I try to get involved there for a little bit, bad and all as I am, you know. But there's a couple of things there, Eamon, that we always talk about this thing in business of, you know, what can be measured can be managed. And this wasn't being measured. The government basically doesn't know that I was ill, that I have had COVID. I'm not there in the statistics. There's nothing to, you know, I was given no instructions about that. And I do think that that means that I think this pandemic is actually an awful lot bigger than what people currently believe in Sweden.
Yeah. Can you take us back to the beginning and Tegnell's unique approach? There's been no lockdown in Sweden. That was his confirmed belief. No lockdown was required. Bars stayed open, restaurants stayed open, masks are not mandatory, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I think the first time Tegnell admitted to hearing of COVID-19, of this new SARS virus that we're dealing with, was on New Year's Eve 2019. So as 2019 was turning into 2020, he got an email that I think every state epidemiologist in the world got, and he went, oh, this could go, you know, this could go pear-shaped reasonably quickly. But he basically approached it from the point of view that this was kind of like an influenza virus. So they decided that this will become endemic. This is going to get absolutely everywhere, and there's nothing that we can do to stop it. So what we have to do is we have to limit the spread in order to protect the health service. And it literally was that basic, that everything was to do with protecting the number of places in intensive care, rather than saying, okay, we want zero COVID, as they would have decided in South Korea at certain times, or New Zealand. Tegnell decided that we're not going to be able to do that. So what we'll do is we'll try to let this sort of take its course. You know, we'll be smart about it. We'll ask people to wash their hands and not to gather indoors. But everything in Sweden, Eamon, was a suggestion. It wasn't a rule. I've been reading over the weekend in Ireland where people are getting fines for traveling beyond their 5-kilometer zone at certain points. None of that was ever. And to this day, they're still not rules. It's still a recommendation that if you travel to Sweden, you have to have a test. And, you know, that applies to everybody, even Swedish citizens. But if you're a Swedish citizen, I was in Dublin recently with my family and we flew back to Sweden. I was the only one who had to show evidence of being double vaccinated. My wife and my two children only had to show their Swedish passports. So there's been a very sort of lax attitude to these things, in that he kind of figured that, you know, this is a war that we're not going to win. So we're just going to let this thing sort of run riot. And, you know, the term herd immunity was used. I remember Boris...
Herd immunity is the concept that was attributed to him. And he was said to be a believer in that.
He was, but this was one of those things that he didn't want to say publicly, because when you say that this is what you're going for, you know, you're nailing your colours to the mast. And we saw what happened to the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, when he said that that was what Britain should be doing. And he was absolutely hammered and he had to row back from that quickly. So there are certain things, and Tegnell has been very, very accessible. Now, I did try to go to a press conference and I was hoping he'd turn up at about 10 days ago. And unfortunately, he didn't show up. He sent one of his subordinates there, and very good conversations. But they're very, very careful about what they say. So they don't use the term herd immunity. It has been used in internal emails that we've been able to see through freedom of information requests, but it's something that has been discussed. You know, it's almost like they know that people are eventually going to wind up reading these emails, so they don't use that particular term. Another thing I noticed with that press conference, at that press conference with Tegnell's subordinate, was they don't refer to COVID still to this day as being an airborne virus. I remember you and I, when we were speaking at the very beginning of this, and they had given us a briefing about how it was droplet-borne, but the size of the droplet depends on whether it's droplet-borne or droplet-borne and airborne. So if the droplets are small enough, then it becomes an airborne virus. And still, when the question was put to Tegnell's subordinate, Sara Bodell, I think her name was, she refused to sort of say, or she declined, should I say, to say, you know, the words, this is an airborne virus. So there are still certain things are taken to be true in the Swedish mitigation strategy as put forward by Tegnell, and they're still very much sticking to those guns.
Now, one of the tests applied in Sweden's case was how they were doing in comparison to Norway, their neighbour, and Finland, and Denmark, of course. Now, last time we spoke, they were doing very badly. And the total number of deaths in Sweden, and we have to bear in mind the population, but bearing that in mind, were much more than they were in Denmark and Norway in particular.
Yeah, essentially what you get, Eamon, is about 10 times the deaths with about twice the population.
Yeah.
So the other Nordic countries, Finland, Norway, Denmark, as you mentioned, they would have populations of around about 5, 6 million people. Sweden would have just over 10. Sweden has 15,170 dead as of today. And I'm not sure, I don't think Norway has broken the 1,000 people dead barrier yet. So there's a huge discrepancy there. And the problem there for the Swedes is that I think it was very much, now you kind of have to have a little bit of sympathy for Tegnell at the same time, even if they did get it wrong on this particular front using this particular metric, right? He took a gamble and he thought, okay, that if this does go through community, there are going to be deaths, but over the course of time, everybody, you know, all the other countries in the world, not just in the Nordic region, are going to catch up with us. And that has proved not to be the case. So Finland is still pretty much where it was. Now Sweden's plateau or Sweden's curve in terms of the number of dead has really, really flattened out. So, you know, from the height of, you know, earlier on in June or in January and February of this year, you know, the peak probably would have been around about New Year's Eve, you know, the turn of the year. And since then, it has been going steadily down and it is quite flat. But you could say quite crassly that, you know, whoever's going to get killed by COVID or by this particular strain of COVID has already been killed by it. And that's really the problem for Tegnell, is that now he's standing there with a very, very high comparative body count and it's very difficult to explain. And now, as more research is being done and as the information is being analysed, they're starting to realise the mistakes that they made. So no less a body than the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences has done a report that came out last week. And it basically said that what Sweden did was too little, too late, or too lenient and too late to prevent the initial spread of infection. And that's a quote, direct quote from the report that they released last week. Now, you could say that's the view of one body. Eamon, these are the people who award the Nobel Prizes for science. So this is not just, you know, some researcher sitting somewhere in the Karolinska Institute. These are very, very well-respected scientists who are saying that in a very restrained way, but they're still, you know, sort of sticking the knife in and saying, look, this was a mistake. It was a mistake not to take the same path as the other countries around the world did.
Yeah, well, the 15,000 figure for deaths is alarming, Philip, when you consider it's a country of only 10 million people. And now with the Omicron variant, it looks like, and of course, there is a general sense of this being out of control across Europe. Indeed, the Austrians have got a mandatory vaccination policy now. In other words, if you aren't vaccinated, you've got to stay at home. Angela Merkel broached that in Germany last week, in her last week in office. And even Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, who is a doctor, or was a doctor rather, she said last week, we have to have a conversation about mandatory vaccination. And that's very serious stuff because it brings into play civil liberties and your own rights to your bodily integrity. But that's where the rest of Europe appears to be. The question is, has Tegnell addressed that? Or what are the rules, if there are rules, about vaccines, for example, and about access to retail, restaurants, bars, and of course, public transport and masks? Do you have to wear a mask?
No, this is the big, again, one of these things that has sort of come back to bite Tegnell on the backside, if you like, is his aversion to masks, right? In the beginning, he said there's no evidence to suggest that masks are in any way effective in terms of preventing the spread of this virus. Now, we now know that they are effective. There was a report recently that said that it reduced the spread of infection by 53% in a control group. And yet still, you know, if you wear a mask here, people will look at you funny. So if I was to go out on public transport now this morning, you won't see anybody or virtually nobody wearing masks. I would say you're probably talking about 1%, 2%, 3% at most. And, you know, we're coming into the time of Christmas shopping and people are indoors. It was -9 out there this morning, Eamon. So people are spending their time indoors at this time of the year, perhaps unsurprisingly. And yet there still is this idea. And this is the problem that the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences has with Tegnell. It's even now, even with, you know, with hindsight, the fact we know that masks work. And yet the public health authority here will not recommend people to wear it, and they will not mandate people. They will not make people wear them. So in terms of restrictions here, you mentioned retail, you mentioned restaurants. The only thing at the moment really is that if you have a concert or if you have a sporting event with more than 100 people indoors, you have to check for vaccine passports at the door, right? Now, that hasn't really worked. It was introduced quite quickly. On Saturday, it was the last day of the Allsvenskan football season here in Sweden. And I went to a game at the Friends Arena. There was 27,000 people there. And they closed the roof of the stadium, de facto making it an indoor event. So 48 hours before, the public health authority said, you're going to have to check to see that everybody's vaccinated. And of course, the club organizing it, AIK, it was chaos completely. And, you know, people ended up going in without showing anything or ID or that. So it really is very haphazard. But they just don't seem to believe that these things are going to do anything. And in a way, Eamon, I'd have to agree with them, because what we now know is that the only thing the vaccine is really going to do for you, and this is what happened in my personal case, was you won't get as sick as if you weren't vaccinated, but you can still spread these new variants. Yes. You can still spread the Delta variant, variant and the Omicron variant. So even if you are vaccinated, it's not really doing a whole lot just to check somebody's vaccine passport. They can still be spreading things in an indoor environment.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Now, what's happened in Ireland and to a lesser extent elsewhere is that for people in hospitality and travel businesses, and also for non-essential retail, they have had restrictions imposed on them. They are penal, and people are losing their jobs and indeed losing their businesses. I take it none of that has happened in Sweden.
Well, there was a slowdown, Eamon, because for instance, the government recommended to those who could to work from home. So essentially, you're talking about white-collar workers. If you have an office job, don't go to the office, go and work from home, right? And what that does then is that reduces the foot traffic that is going to go to local restaurants, local shops. So there have been places that have had to close down. There have been restaurants that haven't survived this. I live in a place called Kista, which is on the north side of Stockholm, and it's very close. It'd be well known, actually, to a lot of Irish people because Ericsson's headquarters is there. And we'd have an awful lot of engineers and people involved in technology who are working there. And every day, these Irish people come from all parts of the city to go there. And they haven't been there for a year and a half. And that deprives, you know, the convenience stores, and it deprives the clothes shops, and it deprives the restaurants of this passing trade. These people might spend 10 euros on a lunch there every day. None of that money has come to my local area in this time. And you can see that in the shops, Eamon, because, you know, there's more and more shops. Oh, there's a new shop coming soon. You know, it's going to take a long time to let a lot of these shops out again. So there definitely has been economic effects. But on the other side of that, then, online trading is up. Things like Uber Eats and Foodora and these food delivery services, they're booming. Everywhere you're seeing people in mopeds and small cars delivering food home to people. So there is still a certain amount of that. So it wouldn't be as bad as what has been in Ireland. in terms of conferences, in terms of people getting together and meeting, concerts, sporting events, it's really only since before the summer there that that's really getting back to itself. So to have 27,000 people at, now that game wasn't sold out, but that's really good for the clubs, obviously, when you have people paying their money coming through the turnstile. So it hasn't been as penal as the Irish situation, but you have to wonder now if they may not end up having to go back, you know, for the start of the next football season in March or April of next year, if they're not going to have to go back. Because if these new variants, Omicron and Delta, prove to be as infectious, well, then there's no other way. You just have to stop people from meeting, or you have to stop providing them with the opportunities to meet outside their own households. And one interesting statistic, Eamon, that just in case I forget to share it with you, was I saw a statistic last night from a Canadian biostatistician who says that Sweden currently has the world's highest R rate at 1.58. Now, the R rate is, you know, if I infect a person, if I'm infected, how many more do I infect? And that's 1.58 at the moment. That's currently the highest in the world, closely followed by South Africa.
And that's a key metric.
Yeah, so, you know, something has to be done. So, again, I mentioned it was -9 this morning. You're not going to take your bike to work this morning.
Right.
You're going to have people on public transport. They're not going to be masked. It's going to be pretty jammed there. Schools are still open. Kids are still going, you know, to school every day. They're going to their football afterwards. They're going to play their floorball after it, you know. So, yeah. You know, foot traffic is back to where it was. A year or two ago, I had no problem getting parking outside every day. I was coming to the studio to speak to you. But now, you know, it literally is back to where it was, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic.
Now, surely with the death toll and the comparisons that could be made with other Scandinavian countries, indeed with other European countries, even with our own country here, is it the case that the politicians leave Tegnell alone? For example, in Ireland now, at the weekend, the story broke that NPHET, which is our public health body for the purposes of COVID, their members, it is said, will not be allowed to give radio, television or media interviews without the government giving the okay. So there is tension, serious tension, between the doctors, the scientists on the one hand, and the politicians on the other. Are those tensions the same in Sweden? Is Tegnell, as he was, I think, when we spoke before, still in a position of an autocrat who can call all the shots?
It would be a very, very brave politician. You know, the fact that Mattias Karlsson of the Sweden Democrats came out and criticised Tegnell so strongly. Now, he's an opposition politician, so he can do that with no great cost. But it would be a very brave politician in government who would come out and say, you know, something critical of Tegnell. No minister would do that. And in fact, when the report was released last week by the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, which criticised Tegnell's strategy, one of the ministers, Lena Hallengren, I think she's the Minister for Social Services, she came out and said, oh, you know, that's just some random report. As if these weren't the people who give out the Nobel Prizes every year, you know. So what I would say, Eamon, is I'd say there's probably a great deal of tension and a great deal of discussion behind the scene.
Some of those Nobel Prizes are a bit dodgy in themselves. I think Henry Kissinger has one.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to criticise the science prizes there, because I simply wouldn't know enough to do so, you know.
No.
But when it comes to those things that they're not really taking that sort of criticism on board. So there's a delineation, a demarcation there, if you will, whereas Tegnell is the man in position. He's calling the shots. You know, he tells the government, this is what we need to do, and the government implements that. It would be extremely unusual for a prime minister or for a minister for health or for a minister for social services to go against his advice or his decisions. And if they were to do so, that could be the beginning of the end for Tegnell, but it could be the beginning of the end for a government. And there's been an awful lot of turbulence. Regardless of COVID, there's been an awful lot of turbulence recently in terms of, you know, governments falling and the first female prime minister.
She lasted 24 hours, didn't she?
7.5. So she made it through 7.5 hours and she couldn't get a budget through the House. So she never actually officially took power. So she had to resign, and then she came back a few days later and she was chosen again. But this time now it's the Social Democrats on their own in a minority government, which is going to limp along for the next year or so. So in that political situation, you could say it's not in anybody's interest to have an election now. But in that precarious position, you know, even under normal circumstances, Eamon, they wouldn't question Tegnell. But with the political situation as it is at the moment, there's absolutely no chance, I don't think anyway, you know, that anybody he's going to come out and criticise him publicly.
And he was criticised before. When people look at the death toll and compare it to other countries, particularly other Scandinavian countries, Are they not alarmed?
I think that...
Are you not alarmed?
Oh, I would be very alarmed, Eamon, because, you know, at the moment, my mother-in-law is undergoing treatment for cancer. And when you think that the explanation for this is it's only the old and the vulnerable... I'm sorry, but they're people too, you know, and the whole purpose of this, what we were told in the very beginning of this, of the Swedish strategy was to protect the elderly and the vulnerable. And Tegnell has admitted it. The former Prime Minister, Stefan Löfven, has admitted it. Even the King of Sweden has admitted it, that on that singular count that they failed. And if they failed at that, which is, to me, that was probably the most important thing as somebody who lives in this country, that's who I want protected. I'll get through this, right? It may be that I can't train properly for another 3-4 months, but I'll be fine. I'll get through it. But for elderly people, I was speaking to a man who's disabled there recently in a small town in the middle of Sweden. He basically hasn't been outside his home, apart from for medical appointments, for the last year and a half. So you are talking about people that, even though there was never a state-imposed lockdown, there's a lockdown imposed on vulnerable people by this situation. And we cannot simply disregard them. We cannot look at what happened in homes for people with dementia here and in old folks' homes here, where there was no cohort care. In other words, that people who are working with people with COVID and people who didn't have COVID. And unfortunately, medical staff were sort of bringing that infection from one ward to the next. That simply cannot be allowed to happen. That can't be right. And somebody has to be held accountable for that. But if you buy into what Tegnell has been saying and doing, and you know, most of the country has, you know, including the government, including Tegnell himself, it's very, very difficult then at this remove to admit that mistakes were made. You know, they might even admit that mistakes were made, but in terms of, you know, okay, how do we stop this happening again? That's the real problem for Tegnell, is that they're not addressing the underlying structural faults, the underlying things that went wrong to cause this enormous death toll.
Now, in the early stages of this pandemic, when you were reporting to us here, Philip, you told us about the cult around Tegnell. You also told us how accessible he was and that you or other journalists could go and talk to him one-on-one. And there was a stage where Swedes, women in particular, were getting tattoos of the state epidemiologist, Anders Tegnell, on their body. You then subsequently, the figures went a bit and there was a reaction, I think, against Tegnell, but they couldn't get their tattoos on. Where is he standing now?
Well, at the moment,
this great hero.
Yeah, as I say, if I do get a gift...
Are they still getting tattoos of him?
Not that I know of. And if I do get a gift token for a tattoo shop, for the local tattoo shop this year, I might choose something else other than the image of Mr. Tegnell on my arm or my leg, you know? I mean, we have to remember, Eamon, that even if he has become less popular, I mean, there was a time when he was just incredibly popular. It was almost like, you know, North Korea levels of popularity for the man. That has decreased. But still, I would say that the majority of people here support him. They would think that he was doing his best at the time with the best information that he was available. Other scientists would disagree with that, but I think the general public still thinks, and it's amazing to think that, you know, that statistic that we've been discussing for so long now, that, you know, 15 times the deaths with only twice the population, you know, that people could somehow look past that and say, no, he was doing his best, you know. So there's no real level of questioning that. They're just going, okay, well, that was what happened and we're past it now. These people cannot be brought back. So let's just continue to move on with this. So I'd say he's still quite popular and it's still very difficult to get through to people or indeed to find out from them why they believe so strongly when this evidence is out there, when this death toll is out there, that he is still the right man for the job almost 2 years into this pandemic.
What's the daily infection rate that the government reports? The government reports, if it reports a daily infection rate here, it's around, at the moment, we're in this fourth surge. It's between 4,000 and 5,000. I think it went to 6,000 on one occasion. The hospitalization of people is much lower. ICUs, we don't have a lot of ICUs in this country. But about 115 people were in ICU yesterday, but we only have a very limited numbers. So the threat to our health service is severe. Do you get a daily infection rate? And is it reported?
You do indeed, Eamon. I mean, the last day I think that I have statistics for here at the moment is for the 2nd of December, and that was 2,202 infections.
Right.
But we have to remember that this is coming off the back of a month where people were told not to test themselves. So it's very difficult to believe that figure. As I say, you know, when I had COVID at the start of November, the middle of November there, that wouldn't be included in these statistics. So, you know, there was never testing of children of under 18s. You know, there's been very, very little testing of them in this country. So there's a huge sort of, you know, a sort of a dark pool of positive tests or of positive cases out there that aren't included in any statistics. And it really is worrying, you know, when I spoke to the public health authority recently, you know, they were saying, okay, you know, we've removed restrictions and we're looking forward to Christmas and that, but they seem to be very, very nervous, Eamon, precisely because of the time of year, the climate, the fact that people are indoors, that people are going to be meeting and getting together for Christmas. If you're having 2,000 cases a day at the moment and very few people are testing themselves, you can only imagine what might happen now as we get closer and closer to Christmas Eve and Christmas Day when the season is celebrated here. So I do think that there's a great worry at the public health authority at the moment that this could explode in late December and early January.
Now, other than people who have been bereaved or died or have relatives and have been bereaved in this country, the people most anguished are publicans, restaurateurs, travel agents, the airlines, of course, small businesses, non-essential retail. All of those people now have been through hell for 21 months and they are receiving assistance from the government, but it's nowhere near sufficient to make up for the losses and the hurt to their business. That's a widespread countrywide scenario. Does that exist in Sweden?
It does, but not to the same extent. So the state acted very, very quickly here, and you got to hand them that now. It was one of those things that really kept public confidence up here, was that they came in and they said, okay, if you have to work from home, if you have to be furloughed, if you have to, you know, only work 2 days a week, we'll pay you for the rest of the time. They started to make negotiations with the banks. They made negotiations with the various different renters of commercial property.
Yeah.
They said, okay, we'll all take a hit on this. The state will pay part. You have to give a discount. And then the person who owns the business and is renting from you, they'll have to do it as well. So it was very, very quick. It was very comprehensive. That has been, they've started to phase that out now, but those things still exist. So you're not going to drop off a cliff. If there was an increase, say if they did decide that, okay, you know, we need to close restaurants at 8 o'clock again, that was one of the few restrictions that was placed on them because the licensing laws, they were able to do that. Well, then they can go back and they can put these things in there very, very quickly. They did change some legislation to enable them to be a lot more nimble if this was to happen again. So it's very difficult to fault them. And they did come out and support strategically important industries such as the airline industry to make sure that Sweden was still accessible to the rest of the world if and when this pandemic ends. So what I do, when I look at the situation for in the Irish entertainment sector, for instance, yes. I know a lot of people working in that. And when you say, okay, you can only have 50% of the audience there, that's very, I mean, there's no profit margin for people in that. So rather than do things like that, it was going to be, okay, if we have to close theatres, that's fine, but we'll make sure that everybody's paid and that as many of the overhead costs as possible are absorbed by the state. Now, nobody's making any profit. Nobody's going to Bali for Christmas on this money, you know, but they are able to survive and to stay in business until we do get out of this.
I'm looking at a photograph in front of me of a bar restaurant in Stockholm. There's a couple embracing in the middle of the room, and nobody is masked, and everyone's just sitting there having their food. If I was in Stockholm tonight, could you and I go out for dinner, have a few pints or whatever, and then head off to a nightclub and dance the night away?
Nothing would give me more pleasure, Eamon. And yes, we could do all of those things and more. We could probably stay out until 5 o'clock in the morning.
Lovely.
If we can stay awake long enough. But basically, you know, everywhere is still open. The Swedish Christmas dinner, they call it Yule Bord, which is this big...
Can you get a direct flight from Dublin to Stockholm?
You can indeed, yeah. I think you'll be able to get one. There's one with SAS at 8:15 in the morning. So if you can get over here, I'll pick you up at the airport, you know. So it's... No, but it is still very much open out there. Now, they are talking about...
Wondered... sorry, there's a slight delay on the line. Philip, I just wondered if it would really be possible, because everybody here is cancelling their Christmas parties, office parties, family get-togethers, all of that, it's gone. And there are restrictions in place. Nightclubs are closed. That's not the case where you are.
No, at the moment, as I say, everything is open for business. So there is, you know, the standard Christmas, like everything to do with Sweden, you know, this thing of the smorgasbord,
yes.
This whole sort of buffet idea where there's loads of different dishes. At Christmas time, that's called Yule Bord, which is translates as the Christmas table. And it's pickled herring and it's smoked salmon. And it's all sorts of different things. That's still open for business. So you can take your colleagues, you can go somewhere, you can have your mulled wine and you can have all these lovely Christmas delicacies at these places. And business is booming. Now, they're trying not to have the place, you know, rammed from one end of the day to the other. I'm sure the ventilation was turned up just a little bit. But there was an incident in Norway there, I'm sure you saw it over the weekend, where I think 120 people were at such an event in Oslo, the Norwegian capital. And it turned out that I think 100 of them eventually ended up testing positive for COVID because one of the people who was there had been in South Africa recently. So while these things are still open in the Nordic region, and particularly in Sweden, the risk is still there. You know, again, I think I've seen somebody referring to it as trying to negotiate with the virus. Well, if we only go out 10 of us, that doesn't matter. The virus doesn't care. Everything is to do with how it hangs in the air and transfers from one person to the other. So, you know, Eamon, you know me, I always love to go out with you any chance I get. So if you want to get in that flight, that's fine. But unfortunately, you'll have to do it at your own risk, my friend.
A final question, Philip. Schools in particular here is a very controversial issue about children. They're going to be vaccinated, it seems. But they're having from today, actually, to wear masks in class. This is causing distress. It's causing controversy. There is no consensus. Some parents agree with it, some parents don't. Teachers, of course, don't appear to be divided because it's a safety measure for them. None of that's going on about schools in Sweden, I take it.
No, masks have never been mentioned here, you know, and especially not for young people. And if you remember our good friend Johan Jiseki, who was the predecessor to Anders Tegnell here, in the very beginning of the pandemic, he came out and ridiculed the idea that asymptomatic children could transfer COVID so that they could infect other people. We now know that not to be true. So there could be a case made for young people or for kids going to school wearing masks. But just on a personal note, Eamon, one of the things that I see, and it comes up again and again in social media, is this idea, and I've seen people, you know, wearing yellow stars, trying to liken the wearing of masks to what happened to the Jews in the Holocaust. I have worked an awful lot with the Auschwitz Museum over the year in terms of journalism, and how we keep telling this story and how we keep this story alive, because there's a story. We have very, very few survivors from that situation left, and yet we must continue to tell this story throughout history and through the future. And it is so deeply, deeply offensive to have been to Auschwitz and to hear people comparing children wearing masks to what happened in the Holocaust. It's absolutely beyond disgusting that people would do that. And I would beg journalists not to allow that to get into the discourse, because it is absolutely, there is no place for that whatsoever.
Okay, Philip, I'm sure everyone agrees with that last point in particular. We're extremely grateful to you for joining us from Stockholm, and take care of yourself. And I'll see if there's any seats available on the next flight to Stockholm. That's Philip O'Connor in Stockholm. And we're very, very grateful to Philip. Look after yourself, Philip. Thanks to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.